Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter, with Alan Cuthbertson as Robert Fentiman, Martin Jarvis as George Fentiman, and Gabriel Wolfe as Inspector Parker. The Unpleasantness of the Bellona Club by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 6 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 3, Mr. Oliver. Endeavouring to trace General Fentiman's movements in the last hours of his life, Lord Peter Wimsey has discovered that the old man spent the night of November the 10th at the home of a Mr. Oliver. When he learns that the General also saw his impecunious grandson, George, that evening, Wimsey hurries down to the Bellona Club to investigate.
Hello, Collier! Look, Collier, I say!
Me?
Collier, look, have you seen George Fentiman around?
Wimsey. No, I haven't. No, I think he's been avoiding us since his grandfather died. Come into my office a moment, will you?
Yeah, righty, huh? What's up, Olbeam?
Now, look here, Wimsey. Aren't you ever going to get finished with this investigation or whatever it is? The members are complaining, really they are, and I can't blame them. They find your everlasting questions an intolerable nuisance, old boy. And no sooner do you stop it than the other fella begins.
What other fella?
That nasty little skulking bloke who's always turning up at the service door and questioning the staff.
I don't know anything about him. I never heard of him. Look, I'm sorry if I'm being a bore and all that, though I swear I couldn't be worse than some of your other choice specimens in that line. But I've hit a snag. Now, that fellow Oliver, whom I mentioned to you...
He's not known here, Wimsey.
No, but he may have been here. Came to pick the General up, perhaps.
If nobody saw him, he can't have been here.
Well, then where did General Fentiman go to when he left that evening? And when did he leave? Look, dash it, Collier, the old boy's a landmark here. He couldn't just disappear. I know that he went to see Lady Dormer, his sister, that afternoon, and I'm pretty sure that, dying as she was, she managed to tell him she was leaving him nearly all her money. I know, too, that he then went to see Dr. Pemberthy in Harley Street, probably to get something for his overexcited heart. I also know that he left Pemberthy's by taxi and was on his way home to Dover Street when he spotted George Fentiman. Now, George got into the taxi and they talked, though what about I do not know yet. When George had been dropped, the old man asked to be driven here. Now, I know he arrived because the commissionaire saw him come in. I know he went into the library to make some notes about how he was going to dispose of his sister's money, because I found the notes under the blotting pad on a writing desk. And that, dash it all, is all that I do know, because at that point the trail goes stone cold. Now, somebody must have seen him leave the building, Collier. I mean, the servants aren't all blind. I don't like to say it, but I can't help thinking that somebody has been bribed to hold his tongue.
My dear Wimsey!
Yes, I knew that would annoy you, but how else do you account for it? Incidentally, who is this fellow you say has been hanging around the kitchen?
I came across him yesterday morning when I went down to see about some wine. Babcock, the wine steward, told me he'd been working the pump handle about old Fentiman, and I gathered he'd been pretty liberal with his cash. I thought you were up to your tricks again.
Is the fellow a sahib?
Good God, no. Looks like an attorney's clerk or something. Nasty little tout.
Well, I'm glad you told me. I shouldn't wonder if he's the snag I'm up against. Probably Oliver covering his tracks.
Do you suspect this Oliver of something wrong?
Well, I rather think so, though I'm damned if I know quite what. But he knows how and where old Fentiman spent the night, and that is what I am after.
What the devil does it matter how he spent the night? He can't have been very riotous at his age.
Well, it might throw some light on the time he arrived here in the morning, mightn't it? And that, in turn, might tell us whether he died before or after his sister. And that will tell us who succeeds to half a million. Anne Dorland or Robert Fentiman. I must find this Oliver fellow, Collier, even if I have to advertise.
Advertise?
Well, I don't think we'll rope in the BBC. Well, not yet, that is. It's so confoundedly public.
No. That'd be most undesirable, but really, Wimsey. Now, please.
Look, I know you'd like me to clear out. All right, I go. My tail well tucked down between my legs and a flea in my ear. Anyway... Do you know where I can find George Fentiman?
His brother, Major Fentiman, said he's getting a job as a motor salesman or some such thing in Great Portland Street.
Ah.
The Walmsley Hubbard outfit, I think he said.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'll pop in there tomorrow, then.
Yeah.
I don't want to upset his wife any more than I need. Well, thank you so much.
Mm.
Yes, I really will go now, Collier. Really. In fact, I've practically gone.
Doing here?
Well, I just toddled along for a chat, don't you know? Been trying this bus out?
Yes, I think I've got the hang of it all right. They've taken me on for a few weeks to see what I can do.
Ah, capital. How about lunch? Come along with me if you've nothing better to do.
Oh, righto. Where?
Well, I've got a fancy to go to Gatty's today. A certain Mr. Oliver lunches there regularly, your brother tells me.
Whatever you say, Whimsy.
Ah, splendid. By the way, you never told me that you'd seen your grandfather the afternoon before he died.
How on earth? Confound it all, Whimsy. Are you behind this infernal watch that's being kept on me?
Watch? Well, who's keeping a watch on you?
There's a fellow following me about. Spy. I'm always seeing him. He came down in the bus with me from Finsbury Park this morning. He was after me all day yesterday, probably about now. I won't have it. If I catch sight of him again, I shall knock his dirty little head off. Why should I be followed and spied on? I haven't done anything. And now you begin.
Well, I swear I've nothing to do with anybody following you about. Honestly, I haven't.
Mm.
Anyway, I wouldn't employ a man who'd let a bloke see when he was being followed. No, when I start hunting you, I shall be as silent and stealthy as a gas leak. What's this incompetent blunt hound like to look at?
Small, thin, with his hat pulled down over his eyes, and an old raincoat with a collar turned up, and a very blue chin.
Gracious me, sounds like a stage detective.
More like a tout.
Tout? Oh, good Lord. Do you know, I bet it's the same man who's been haunting the Bellona and asking questions. And I put him down in my mind as Oliver's minion. Hmm. Well, if you see him, George, give a yell. I want to talk to him.
All right, but I wish he'd stop persecuting me.
Well, we'll settle his hash if we catch him. Now, look here, forget him for a bit. Tell me about the old general. How did he seem the last time you saw him?
Oh, he seemed fit enough. Crusty, as usual.
Crusty, was he? What about?
Private matters.
You know, I'm not at all sure that relations shouldn't all be painlessly put away after 80 years, or at any rate segregated, or have their tongues sterilized so they can't be poisonously interfered.
Oh, I wish they were. Damn it all, I know the old man was in the Crimea, but he's no idea what a real war's like. He never had his inside gassed out, so they had to go to his wife for pocket money. Do you know, the old devil actually threatened to cut me out of the 2,000 he had to leave me if I didn't reform my domestic behavior. Well, that's the way he talked. Just as if I was carrying on with another woman or something.
Look, half a moment. Did he say all this to you in the taxi that day?
Huh? Yes, he did. I had to promise to turn over a new leaf and all that. Like being back at one's prep school.
But didn't he mention anything about the money Lady Dormer was leaving him?
Not a word. I don't suppose he knew about it.
Oh, I think he did. He'd just come from Siena, you know.
Hmm. Yes. Well, that would rather explain it, then. If he knew he was in the running for 500,000. By Jove, yes. I expect he would feel a bit anxious at the idea of leaving it all to a fellow he looked on as a waster. I bet the old boy was sounding me to see what sort of disposition I got. The old fox. I say, that's a thought. Perhaps it's just as well he popped off when he did. He might have cut me off with a shilling, eh? I say, yes. Perhaps his death wasn't so unlucky after all.
Well, your brother would have seen you through in any case, surely.
I suppose he would. Robert's quite a decent sort, really, though he does get on one's nerves, so...
Does he?
Oh, he's so thick-skinned, the regular, unimaginative Briton. I believe Robert would cheerfully go through another 5 years of war and think it all a very good rag. He was proverbial, you know, for never turning a hair. Oh, yes. Robert was thought a damn good soldier, Whimsy. Plenty of nerve, you see. Plenty of nerve.
Hello?
Is that you, Whimsy? It's me, Major Fentiman. Look, I say, is that Whimsy?
Yes, Whimsy speaking. What's up?
I've seen Oliver.
Have you, by Jove? Where?
Getting into a train at Charing Cross.
Did you speak to him?
No, it's maddening. I was just getting my ticket when I saw him passing the barrier. Tore after him, and there was a circle train standing at the platform. He bolted in and they clanged the doors. I rushed on, waving and shouting, but the train went out. I cursed like anything.
Yeah, I bet you did. Well, how very sickening. Well, it can't be helped, that's all. He'll probably turn up again. Charing Cross seems to be a haunt of his. He phoned from there on the evening of the 10th, you know.
Yes, so he did.
Look, I'll tell you what we better do, Fentiman. The thing's getting rather serious. I propose that you should go and keep an eye on Charing Cross Station, and I'll get hold of a private detective from Sleuths Incorporated, and you can describe Oliver to him, and then watch turn and turn about, what?
Oh, well, hang it all, Whimsy. That'll take a lot of time. I've gone back to my rooms at Richmond now. And besides, I mean, I've got my own duties to do.
It's $500,000 of money, Fentiman. Of course, if you're not keen...
Well, yes, I am keen. I don't believe anything will come of it.
Probably not, but it's worth trying. And in the meantime, I'll have another watch kept at Gatty's. Oh, by the way, which waiter is it who knows him? I had a talk with the head man today, and he didn't know anything about him.
No, it wasn't the head waiter. The plump, dark one.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, well, I'll find him. And you'll see to the Charing Cross end, what?
I suppose so.
Good. Well, I'll get hold of a tech and send him along to you. Cheerio, then.
Cheerio, Whimsy.
What, ho, Mabels?
Ah, good afternoon, Lord Peter.
Now, what is it? Bunter said you wanted to see me urgently. What's up?
Lord Peter, The person from Sleuths Incorporated has reported at last.
Ah, now I knew something would happen before the week was out. Well, go on, Merbles. What did he say?
Well, it seems, Lord Peter, that at 6 o'clock yesterday evening, the particular sleuth in charge of the case was relieved by Major Fentiman so that he could go and have dinner. Mm-hmm. On returning to his post an hour later, he was presented with a note by a ticket collector which ran, "Just seen Oliver getting into taxi. Am following. Will communicate to refreshment room. Fentiman."
So he waited there at Charing Cross?
Precisely. However, the second man whom you had instructed to put on the case, Lord Peter, was all the while of following the Major unbeknownst. Presently, a call came through from Waterloo. "Oliver on Southampton train. I am following." The sleuth hurried down to Waterloo, found the train had departed, and followed on by the next. At Southampton, he made inquiries and learned that a person answering to Major Fentiman's description had attacked an elderly gentleman and accused him of being Mr. Oliver. The gentleman had immediately produced his passport, which showed him to be a retired manufacturer of the name of Postlethwaite, living at Kew, and had subsequently been allowed to proceed on his way. Major Fentiman, contrariwise, had been detained by the police.
Great Scott! So what did my sleuth do?
He at once repaired to the police station, where he managed to secure the Major's release on bearing witness to his identity and good faith. It was his opinion, Lord Peter, in view of the frank behaviour of Mr. Postlethwaite, that a genuine mistake had been made as to identity. But Major Fentiman insisted that he was not mistaken.
And where are they now?
The second sleuth is still in Southampton in case you should have need of his services there. The other, and Major Fentiman, returned to town late last night. I've asked the Major to call on me as soon as possible. I wish to remind him that private persons are not entitled to assault peaceable people against whom no charge can be made.
Is Mr. Marbles in?
Yes, sir.
Bless my soul, that sounds like him now. Ah, Major.
Afternoon, Mobles. Whimsy.
Hello. Don't worry, Fentiman. We've heard the full story. Now just sit down and cool off.
I'm sorry, old man. It was damn stupid of me, but I lost my temper. To hear that fellow calmly denying that he'd ever seen me or poor old grandfather and coming out with his bits of evidence so pat put my bristles up. Of course, I see now that I made a mistake. I quite realize that I ought to have followed him up quietly. But how was I to know that he wouldn't answer to his name?
But you ought to have guessed when he didn't that either you had made a mistake or that he had some very good motive for trying to get away.
Well, what do you mean?
I mean that if he really is Oliver and has gone off in that elaborate manner with a false passport and everything, he must have something important to conceal.
Well, you don't mean there's something funny about Grandfather's death? I mean, oh, surely not.
Well, there must be something funny about Oliver anyway, mustn't there? On your own showing.
Oh, but hang it all. What could he have to do with the old man's death?
Well, I don't know, but I think it's time that we tried to find out.
How?
Well, we might apply for an exhumation order.
Dig him up?
But, Lord Peter...
Well, why not, Merbles? There was no post-mortem, you know.
Well, no, but Dr. Penberthy knew all about it and gave the certificate.
Not true, but at that time there was no reason to suppose that anything was wrong.
There is now.
Well, there's Oliver mysteriously running off.
But, Whimsy, I mean, think what a scandal it'd make.
Well, why should it? You're the executor. You can have the whole thing done quite privately.
Well, yes, but surely the Home Office would never consent on such flimsy grounds.
Well, I will see that they do. They'll know I wouldn't be keen on anything flimsy. Little bits of fluff were never in my line. Besides, we can say we want to examine the contents of the viscera to see how soon the general died after taking his last meal. That might be of great assistance in solving the question of the survivorship, eh, Merbles? You might suggest such a thing to Pritchard, anyway.
Who's Pritchard?
And Orland solicitor.
That is a very good idea, Lord Peter.
And if he's an honest man and his client's an honest woman, they'll support the application. And if they don't, then we'll know that they have something to conceal.
But I say, Whimsy, isn't there some other way of doing this? It's deuced unpleasant. I wish to goodness we could compromise on it.
But the lady in the case won't compromise. Now, you know that, Fentiman. And we have got to get at the facts somehow.
Oh, damn it all. I suppose it'll have to be done then.
Splendid. I'll ring Pemberthy and tell him he'd better be present, I fancy. And now I will be leaving you. Fentiman, Merbles will apply to the Home Office on your behalf. Cheer, frightfully ho.
Yeah, Merbles?
Hmm?
Come to dinner this evening. Inspector Parker's coming along.
Why, thank you, Lord Peter. I would be delighted.
All right. 8 o'clock then, sharp. Goodbye.
And then, Lord Peter, at about 5 o'clock, when I was halfway through writing to Mr. Pritchard about the exhumation, a note arrived from the gentleman informing me that Miss Dorland was now willing to compromise on a division of the money.
Really? Now, I wonder why. Well, she must have lost patience. Well, it's too late for compromise now, Merbles, unless you're willing to be party to a fraud.
Lord Peter, I don't understand you.
I think Charles does, don't you, Charles? I've been bringing Mr. Parker up to date, Merbles, telling him that when I asked a few discreet questions at Gatty's the other day, not only had nobody there the slightest recollection of Mr. Oliver, no inquiries about him had ever been made by Major Fentiman either.
Oh, dear me.
What you're saying, in fact, Peter, is that this Oliver has no real existence.
Correct. Oliver was the carrot on the donkey's nose, my noble self being cast for the part of the donkey. Not caring for the role, I concocted a carrot of my own in the person of Sleuths Incorporated. And Robert Fentiman, not knowing there was a second sleuth on his tail, rose to the bait.
But why assault a perfect stranger and accuse him of being Oliver? That seems to me to be taking a passion for thoroughness a bit far.
I agree.
But, Lord Peter, please explain. What exactly has Major Fentiman been doing? Did you suspect him of...
Well, I knew something odd had happened, you know, as soon as I saw the general's body.
Yeah?
His left knee joint was loose, while the rest of him was still stiff with rigor mortis.
Well, somebody had forced the joint after rigor had set in, you mean?
That was my conclusion. Yes. Penberth is too, incidentally. Only, of course, being a doctor, he wasn't going to make any indiscreet uproar if he could avoid it. It don't pay, you know.
I know, yes.
Anyway, the next step was to try to find out what had actually happened to the general on the night of the 10th and the morning of the 11th. And the moment I got round to his flat, I was faced with two entirely contradictory pieces of evidence. First, there was the story about Oliver, which appeared more or less reasonable upon the face of it. Yeah. And secondly, there was Woodward's evidence about the clothes.
Well, you mean the slight tear on the trousers and the varnish and the bit of carpet you found on the shoe?
No. No, not something that was there. Something that wasn't there.
What?
Woodward said that he'd removed nothing from the clothes except the contents of the pocket. You remember?
No, I don't quite follow, Peter. What did you expect to find?
My dear Charles, consider what day it was.
Day?
November the 11th. Armistice Day.
A puppy!
Precisely! The general was not wearing a poppy. Now, is it conceivable that if he had walked to the club that morning, he would have done so without wearing his Flanders poppy? A patriotic, military old bird like that? Well, my dear... I mean, it's unthinkable.
But it Then how did he get to the club, Peter? He was there, you know.
Ah, true, but the odd thing is that nobody saw him arrive. And what is more, nobody saw him leave the previous evening. General Fentiman, one of the best-known figures in the club. And he seems to have become suddenly invisible. Now, that won't do, you know.
What's your idea, then? That he slept the night at the club?
I think he slept a very peaceful and untroubled sleep that night. In the club.
Lord Peter, you shock me inexpressibly. Are you suggesting that he died...
sometime the previous evening. Yes.
But he couldn't have sat there all night in the smoking room, Peter. The servants would have been bound to notice
him. Well, of course. But it was to somebody's interest to see that they didn't notice. Somebody who wanted it thought that the old boy didn't die till the following day, after the death of Lady Dormer.
Robert Fentiman.
Exactly.
Major Fentiman.
Yes, Smurbles. Major Fentiman, who, as residuary legatee, succeeded to all monies not specifically devised elsewhere. In particular, Lady Dormer's half-million.
But did Robert know that Lady Dormer was leaving the bulk of her fortune to General Fentiman?
Well, that is a point that I'm not altogether happy about, Charles, but I think he must have done.
Huh. Well, all the same, Peter, if the General did die, as you say, on the evening of the 10th, where was the body? You must admit, it would have been a trifle noticeable if left about.
No.
What?
No. No, repellent as the whole notion is to me, I see no difficulty about that, Mr. Parker. Major Fentiman was at that time living in the club. No doubt the General died in his bedroom and was concealed there till the next morning.
No, that won't work, Mobles. Oh. I think the General's hat and coat and things were in Robert's bedroom, but the corpse couldn't have been. Now think. Look, here is a photograph of the entrance hall with the big staircase running up in full view of the front door and the desk of the bar entrance, you see?
Mm.
Yeah. Now, would you risk carrying a corpse downstairs in the middle of the morning with servants and members passing in and out continually?
Yeah.
No, well, of course you wouldn't. So the body was not in Robert's bedroom.
Oh. But where, then?
Yes, where? I mean, after all, Peter, we've got to make this story hold water.
No, for yourself. Now, here is a photograph of the end bay of the library, where the General was sitting making notes about the money that he was to inherit.
Yeah.
Now, it's a very nice, retired spot, you notice. Invisible from the doorway. Now, I think that is where the General died.
Oh.
Now, here is a shot of the library taken from the smoking room. Observe, in the anteroom between them, the telephone cabinet.
Yes.
Telephone cabinet.
Which you will remember had a label on it saying, out of order on the morning of Armistice Day. Old Weatheridge has been moaning about it ever since, but I can't find anybody who remembers putting up that notice.
But, Lord Peter, this is impossible, surely. Think of the risk.
Well, what risk?
Well,
I agree with Peter. There wouldn't have been a great deal of risk. If anybody had opened the door, they'd simply have come across the old man sitting there dead. No doubt the tragedy would have been put down to his not seeing the notice and then dying of fury at not being able to get his call.
Right, Charles. Agitation acted on a weak heart and all that. Not very risky at all, really, Mobles. And what's more, I've proved that he was there.
What?
I went down to the Bologna Club earlier this evening, and do you know what I found inside that telephone cabinet?
Fingerprints.
No. That was too much to hope for after all this time. Look, what do you say, Charles?
I think you found a long scratch on the paint where the foot of the corpse rested and stiffened in that position.
Hold in one, yes. And that, of course, is why the leg had to be bent with violence, in order to drag the corpse out.
Was there anything else? Did the carpet match?
It did, yes. And there was a projecting nail on the seat, which must have been responsible for the slight tear in the trouser leg.
Lord Peter, tell me one thing. There were a great number of people in the smoking room all that morning. If it were as you suggest... how could Fentiman have brought the body in without being observed?
Were there people there all morning, Mobles? Are you sure? Wasn't there just one period when one could be certain that everybody would be either out in the street or upstairs on the big balcony that runs along in front of the first floor windows, looking out and listening? It was Armistice Day. Remember?
The 2-minute silence. God bless my soul, how abominable! At the moment when all our thoughts should be concentrated on the brave fellows who lay down their lives for us, to be engaged in perpetrating a fraud and an irreverent crime.
Half a million is a good bit of money.
Horrible.
Horrible indeed, Mobles. Meanwhile, what do you propose to do about it?
Do? Robert Fentiman will have to confess to this disgraceful plot immediately. Then we shall have to explain matters to Mr. Pritchard and apologize. I really hardly know how to tell him such a thing.
Well, I rather think he suspects a good deal of it already. I didn't tell you, but that fellow who was spying on George turned out to be Pritchard's clerk. I caught him following me this afternoon, and he came clean when I shook him reasonably hard by the collar. And, of course, Pritchard treated me like a conspirator when I called on him.
Bless my soul, to think that I should be mixed up in a thing like this. Major Fentiman will have to find another man of business in future. And, of course, this exhumation will have to be stopped at once.
Ah, yes, Purple.
I shall attend in person at Robert Fentiman's rooms in Richmond tomorrow morning. And I can only hope, Lord Peter, that I will be able to bring him to a sense of his situation.
Hello?
Lord Peter.
Nobles, my dear fellow, what is up? I thought you hated the telephone.
Lord Peter, we have been outwitted. We have been forestalled.
My dear Nobles, your method of recalling one to the dull business of the day is as delightful as it is unexpected. Anything better calculated to dispel that sluggish feeling, I can scarcely imagine.
Lord Peter, Robert Fentiman has disappeared.
Good God.
In that episode of The Unpleasantness at the Bologna Club, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Robert Fentiman, Alan Cuthbertson. George Fentiman, Martin Jarvis. Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe. Mr. Merbles, John Gabriel. Collier, Blaine Fairman. Mr. Oliver was adapted by Chris Miller from the book The Unpleasantness at the Bologna Club by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.